Welcome everybody to another episode of the Haunted Vermont Podcast. My name is Paul Doski, like always, and here we have the lovely lady behind the Ghost City Ghost Walk and author known as Thea Lewis. Thea, welcome aboard and thank you for joining.
It's great to be with you today.
Yeah. So, you know, this is awesome. You know, I've seen you a few times out and about before, you know, COVID hit the world and everything. So I've seen you in Woodstock doing your book pitches there. I forget the event right now. It's like the Woodstock, like,
Have been the big book fair that they have in Woodstock?
Yes.
Yeah.
I've seen you there, and I remember you were doing a Barnes & Noble appearance in Burlington one time, and as I realized you were going to be at the Woodstock Book Fair, I told myself I would have brought my book so you could sign them for me, but I didn't realize you were going to be there. So,
well, thanks for your support anyway. Yeah, I just remembered that thing is called Bookstock, which is cool.
Bookstock,
yeah, yes. And I spent the day there. It was a lot of fun. It was, of course, you know, before the pandemic hit. But I know that they're doing them again. So that is cool.
Yeah, you'll have to keep me posted so that way, hopefully, I can like go run up there or drive up there. If I run there, that's going to be quite a bit. So real quick, for those that may not know who you are, can you just give us a little brief bio of of yourself, what I guess made you become an author, and a little bit about your Queen City Ghost Walk?
Sure. Well, Queen City Ghost Walk actually started in 2002. I had been working at WCAX TV. I had a career there as a writer producer for about 23 years. And I had been there a while when in 2001, I went on a little weekend vacation to Salem, Massachusetts, and I'd never been on a ghost tour before. And I was fascinated by the history and I thought it was a lot of fun. So all the way home, driving back to Vermont, I just kept thinking, why doesn't Burlington have a ghost tour? This sounds great. So I did research for a whole year. And I had a friend who got a hold of these wonderful books that were created by people who are involved with the local historical society. And they were called Historic Guides to Burlington. There were three volumes. So I started learning about the history of the buildings and started letting people know I was hoping to do a ghost tour. And I got to tell you, Paul, when you tell people who are interested in ghosts what you're going to do, you know, going to do a ghost tour, people were practically leaping across, you know, their dinner partners at parties to tell me about the stories they knew. And so my rule for myself in 2002 was I needed to have five corroborating stories if I was going to put the story on the tour. So if somebody told me about a haunt, for instance, I was at a cocktail party and I told somebody I was going to be trying to do a ghost tour. And this man leaned over his wife and said, well, you know, the Follett House is haunted. And so he meant the Follett House, which is the Pomerleau real estate building in Burlington that overlooks the lake. And I said, I didn't, but maybe I do now. So I started, I talked to the people at the Follett House. First of all, they had some great stories. Talked to some other people who had worked inside the building, some contractors who had been there. And all of a sudden, I had my five corroborating stories, and I could put that on my list for the tour. The first ghost tour happened in October of 2002, and I only did a week, just the week leading up to Halloween and Halloween night. And slowly over the years, the dates, people started wanting more ghost tours, and my husband said, why aren't you doing these earlier in the year? And I said, well, isn't it just a Halloween thing? And he laughed and said, no, Thea, it is not. So we started moving back through October, back through September, back through August. And, you know, as you probably know what follows, we had one tour. And that tour was our downtown tour, which is now called the Darkness Falls Tour. And after that, Ghosts and Legends of Lake Champlain, cemetery tours, and the rest is kind of history.
That's a lot to take in. Now, you also,
it is, I know.
And so when did your true crime come into play? Or was that also included with your ghost hunts?
Well, when I started writing books for the History Press in 2009, my books were haunted books. The first one was, of course, Haunted Burlington, Spirits of Vermont's Queen City. And a lot of people will say, you know, they'll say, could you tell me, I need to know how to get a publisher. And I'm no help at all, because I was sitting at my desk at work one day and opened up my personal email on my coffee break. And I had a message from a managing editor saying, we don't have a Haunted Burlington book in our list of books, and we'd like to know if you'd like to write one. So after that, you know, Ghosts and Legends of Lake Champlain, Haunted Inns and Ghostly Getaways. So when I wrote Wicked Vermont, which is mostly a non-haunted book, it's about kind of quirky stories of things that have happened all over the state. I discovered some really interesting true crime stuff about Burlington online, you know, in the old Free Press archives and other places. And I said to myself, back in 2019, well, why am I not doing a true crime tour? And so the first tours were bus tours, but of course, during a pandemic, you can't do a bus tour. So we had no walks in 2020. And last year, I said to my husband, you know, I don't think I need to do a bus tour, because there are enough places I can walk to in downtown Burlington where I can develop a true crime tour. And so that's what we did last fall. And except for a couple of nights, we were sold out all through our season. So true crime, as you know, Paul, is huge right now, and it all worked out.
Well, you know what they always say, saying, it's kind of like the whole Netflix and chill, but now it's like serial killer documentaries and chill or something like that.
Serial,
you know,
killer, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a meme the other day, you know, it was somebody who was talking about, you know, how they relax, and how they relax was, you know, like a bag of chips and watching, you know, binge watching some true crime shows.
Yeah, it's almost like that meme where they say, if you can fall asleep after watching a horror movie or something, then you need to, like, you're not normal or something like that. I forget how they worded the ending, but it's like, it's like, if you can fall asleep just fine after watching a horror movie, you're not normal, basically.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. I there's definitely plenty of stuff that keeps me up at night, so.
I believe it.
Yeah.
So you just mentioned your Haunted Burlington, Spirits of Vermont, Queen City. I almost like screwed up the title right there again. I don't know what I was trying to say there, but Queen City or something? I don't know. I know that's the thing, but I don't know what my brain was just thinking. But anyway, like, you know, real quick there, what are like some two stories out of that one that you could, like, you know, throw at the listener, so that way it might, like, intrigue them to maybe possibly check out more of this, and besides your other book too, which we'll go into, but, like, you know, from what you can recall, what are maybe two stories that you would like to share about it?
Well, it's easier for me to recall off the top of my head some of the stories from Haunted Burlington, because many of them are still on my Burlington tours. I get into trouble sometimes if I try to take a popular story off the tour. There's one story that we were doing a while ago about American Flatbread and the ghost there. Mm. And I moved it out of the rotation for a while. And a woman wrote me an email and said, I can't believe you would take that story off your tour. My relatives are coming from Idaho, and I've promised them that story. So, but a couple of the stories I really love in the book Haunted Burlington. Well, first of all, because you do what you do, you know that the internet is saturated with stories about H.H. Holmes, America's first serial killer. And in Haunted Burlington, I do talk about him, not because of his Chicago exploits, but because of his Burlington connection. I like to call H.H. Holmes UVM's deadliest student, because he did attend.
Nice.
Yeah, he did attend the medical school at the University of Vermont for a year. It was one person who weighed in on our Queen City Ghost Walk Facebook page called him a UVM dropout. H.H. Holmes, the UVM dropout.
But,
He's fascinating. I mean, several ideas in the Holmes story. I mean, first of all, that he was not only a psychopath but a polygamist. He also swindled people out of their money. He did insurance scams. He may have killed in excess of 200 people, thanks to his knowledge of medicine and the fact that he owned a hotel during the 1893 Chicago World's Fair. And he did come to Burlington when he was in, you know, he was in hot water with all of these insurance scams, and the authorities were looking for him. And what he did during the end of his life as a serial killer in the United States was just grisly and fascinating. He ended up taking someone else's children across country and into Canada and, you know, bumping them off one by one. So just so many things about H.H. Holmes. The fact that people are looking at handwriting samples that indicate he may also have been Jack the Ripper.
I remember hearing that. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a deep, deep well of information when you start talking about H.H. Holmes. And there are a lot of great H.H. Holmes books. One that's an award-winning book is that book, Devil in the White City. And then there's another, I had it here somewhere. It's called Depraved. I can't remember the author's name, but that's also a fine H.H. Holmes book. Another story I love, which is I talk about him in Haunted Burlington, and I think talk about him in Ghosts and Legends of Lake Champlain, is the story of the Hermit of Champlain. And that that is a guy who used to live in a very old building on Burlington's waterfront. His name was Isaac Nye. He was a merchant. He had a shop in town. He moved his business to the edge of the waterfront, and he sold things to folks in the neighborhood, the Battery Street neighborhood, and in town. Battery Street used to be called Water Street back in the day. And he dealt with the ships, did business with ships that came into the harbor. But he was also a recluse, and he ended up, when he passed away, asking that he be laid out on the counter where he'd done business before he closed his shop. And his shop had been, because he was such a recluse, his shop was closed for many years. And then when people filed through to pay their respects, nobody cleaned anything up. So there's this old store with this old dead man lying on the counter, and, you know, dead bats and rats and spider webs and things. And people just, I guess Isaac Nye was so strange while he was alive that they just took it as a matter of course that he would be weird after he passed away. So circumstances would be strange after he passed away.
Yeah. That is true. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. And go back to H.H. Holmes for a minute. So is it safe to say that we're technically the one to blame for the medical warnings?
Well, no, because he did go on and get more. He started off in Burlington, and I have no doubt he was. I mean, I know he was a wily character. He was also probably a pretty bright guy. He was one of those evil geniuses, I guess. But he started off in Burlington. He said that the medical school was too small to suit his needs. I kind of feel like he was probably up to some of the stuff, up to no good in Burlington, and it was a question of being a matter of time before he was caught. Took off, moved on to greener pastures, did get his degree in pharmacy, and then, you know, decided, you know, to create havoc there in Chicago. And I've read that H.H. Holmes didn't seem like there was any rhyme or reason to why he killed somebody, except for those insurance scams that he was doing. Like he discovered that back in a time when we didn't have any kind of, you know, we didn't have a lot of mass communication, social media, H.H. Holmes would take out an insurance policy on a fictitious person and then later on provide a body that corresponded to the description that he had given and collect the money. I mean, what a crazy scheme.
That's almost like as bad as Grave Robin in a way.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, that's a whole different story too. Outtake. Yeah. Let's see here. Just like, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think. There's another place too, that I don't think I've heard you mention yet. It's not American Flatbread, but there's another one. I think that's close to you guys. It's starts with an S, like
Let's see. I don't know. We generally, depending on the year, there are a lot of places we have gone to Vermont Pub and Brewery, and we explore the Old Merchants Bank on College Street. There's a great ghost there, kind of a watchful ghost named Howard Ledger. We actually found out who the ghost was. We're pretty sure we know who the ghost was. And let's see, what else? So we definitely have done the Follett House. Just so many different places on the tour. Nectar's is a little haunted on Main Street. Nectar's has got some cool and spooky energy. People have talked about seeing the ghosts of twins. Kitchen workers in the past have talked about seeing the ghosts of twins, a boy and a girl. And let's see, I'm trying to think of where else we've been. What else? The mall. I'm super worried about the mall. People unkindly, the Burlington Town Center Mall. It's closed now. And it's a big part of it's a big hole in the ground. And and I am definitely worried. I've made jokes that, you know, people are worried about the changes in the infrastructure and housing retail. And I am worried about the ghosts, because Burlington Town Center had three ghosts that I knew of. One was the ghost of, the typical, Paul, because you deal in ghosts, you've heard the stories from different places, usually rural, but called the White Lady or the Lady in White.
Oh, yeah.
People will see. Yeah. So the mall had a report of a White Lady or Lady in White. The mall also had a man, I feel like the Lady in White was maybe late 1700s. There's an 1800s gentleman that would appear as a full body apparition, and then there's a young boy, maybe 8 or 9 years old, who would often appear near the front doors of the mall when the mall was closing up at night, and they'd turned out the lights, security's closing the doors, escorting the workers out, because they would always make that announcement, the mall will be closing in 10 minutes. So they get everybody out of there, and then all the people who are working like count their money and lock up, and then they leave. And we had a couple of young ladies, handful of young ladies, who talked about walking out the front doors and their friends walking behind them would say that they'd seen this little boy kind of hanging out, walking out the doors with them. A couple of security guards mentioned seeing this kid kind of hanging around. And he didn't look like, he's like, knee-length pants and a little cap. Didn't look like kids dressed today. So it's a fascinating thing to me. I always know that, or I always hear that any kind of construction upheaval, changing of a place, unsettles the spirits that are inside. So I'm wondering what it's going to be like when they build whatever they're building. We'll see.
Definitely. And I just found what I was trying to think of. It was called the Shanty Restaurant.
Oh, the Shanty. Yeah, yes. The Shanty is the one that's connected with, and I'm sorry, I can't believe I didn't say the Shanty. It's Isaac Nye at the Shanty on the Shore. And the folks inside the Shanty have talked about being upstairs in the kind of lounge, relaxing portion upstairs. And if you, there have been times when people have talked about Isaac Nye or said his name a little few too many times, and the liquor bottles behind the bar will begin to rattle back and forth, and things in the room will blow around even though the windows are closed. We've had servers in the place talk about having really strange things happen to them. People
Nothing
carrying supplies. What's that?
Nothing getting thrown?
I haven't heard of anything getting thrown. I've heard of furniture being moved and people feeling the sensation of someone they can't see bumping up against them, which is creepy enough.
And in itself,
pretty creepy. We've actually had people who have attended events at another restaurant that is haunted, that used to be right across the little street from the Shanty, the old Ice House restaurant.
Yep.
We've had people talk about going out to their cars at night and seeing what appeared to be an elderly man in old-fashioned clothes standing out behind the Shanty, just looking off into the distance. So maybe that was Isaac Nye. We don't know.
Yeah, that was, I was just about to mention that. That story there between the shanty and the ice house, they almost feel like it might be the same spirit. So I don't know.
I don't know. The ice house has a great apparition, a woman ringing a dinner bell. And there was a period of time back when they were building steamboats on the waterfront. There was a period of time when there was a crew building a steamboat right out there behind where the ice house is now. So it would be interesting to know whether she was the person responsible for feeding that crew of men who were building the steamboat.
Yeah, there's a lot of crazy theories, I bet, we could go into. And to touch on, like, near the waterfront, too. So you have the second book that you did, The Ghosts and Legends of Lake Champlain. And so I guess I'm going to have to mention a couple things with this one, obviously, because it's Lake Champlain. But one specific story that I actually loved about, and I'd like to hear more from you if you remember it at all, is the I forget if it was the pirate ship or some sort of ghost ship that is seen.
Oh, the ghost ship.
It's
the Phoenix. Yeah. The steamer Phoenix. And Jehaziel Sherman and his son Richard were both captains at one time or another on the Phoenix. Jehaziel was the older one. And he apparently was, you remember the story? He was cursed. He came from Whitehall, New York, and docked the boat in Burlington. They were getting ready to leave and go up to St. John. They're going to head up to Canada. And what happened was this woman came to the, came with one of the mates, and the mate said that he had tried to figure out what it was. She didn't speak terribly good English, but she needed to get to Canada and she didn't have the fare. And so Sherman sent her away. And later on, he's walking across the deck of his ship and there she is lying there sleeping. It was about midnight. And so they get to the shoals, Colchester Shoals. And after he discovers her, he tells a couple of mates to put her in a lifeboat and take her off and drop her off on shore. And the mates are astounded, right? I mean, come on, this little old woman in the middle of the night. And she stands up in the lifeboat and points at Sherman and says, "You will burn and you will die." And he doesn't believe. He's like, this is a crazy, crazy thing. But he did get sick. And so his son ended up having to captain the ship. And when he was in charge of his father's, the boat that his father was customarily the captain of, Richard Sherman had a huge fire out at the same place, Colchester Shoal. And so we've got a shipwreck down in the bottom of Lake Champlain now, the Phoenix. And interestingly enough, the father went on to have another boat. He left the Lake Champlain Transportation Company, began transporting goods across the lake with another boat, and that boat was called the Water Witch. And I love the Water Witch because I think, what a great connection to this woman who created so much havoc in his life. It's a fun story.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah, I remember that one intrigued me because, you always hear about these ghost ships, and then, like, it just, you never would think that something like that would be around this area. You would always think it would be like, the North Pacific or the Gulf of Mexico or the other one that is brain farting in my head right now. But you would think it would just be that, it's kind of like the Amelia Earnhardt who flew around the world and disappeared, kind of think of that. You kind of think of that, like, and then with Amelia, you can go into, like, the Bermuda Triangle, that type of thing. Like, oh man. This almost sounds like a rabbit hole. Every time you go, you think your eyes into the text of something new.
Yeah.
You never know. And half the time, it makes me wonder, well, how did you get this theory to begin with, depending on the theory,
Yeah, it's kind of digging through history and hearing, like I said, so many stories about these people and the things they did. It's really, you know, this stuff is so interesting. And I just love reading about all the connections between the different, you know, captains and the different boats and all the different things that happened. Another story that I really like isn't about it does have a ship in it, but I love the story of the little island out there in
Grand Isle.
The little Rock Dunder.
Rock Dunder.
That is, there's an old Abnaki tale about how Bodzihozu there, and I hope I'm saying it right, they had a creature who was kind of a god who was supposed to have created all of the Champlain Valley, and then it rained and created Lake Champlain. And they talk about this creature as being this very large creature with four arms, but no legs, and just dragging itself around. And so they say that after he created all of these beautiful things, he turned himself to stone so that he could sit forever in the middle of Lake Champlain and regard everything he made. And so there's a story about a ship that was out there during the War of 1812, and a commodore, I guess, on this ship that thought in the fog of Lake Champlain that little island in the dark, in the fog, was another ship, an enemy ship, and he ordered his men to fire on it. And they were like, no, Captain, it's not, you know, it's not a ship. It's just this big rock sticking out. And so apparently when the mists parted and the sun came up, he looked at it and realized that it really was just a rock and yelled, "It's a rock, by Dunder." And that's how it got its name. It's just these stories passed down, and, you know, you don't know. Sometimes you take them with a grain of salt, but Rock Dunder, it makes sense. It's a rock by Dunder, which was the closest, you know, one of the closest things, I guess, you could get to a curse word you could say in front of other people back in those days.
Amazing. Yeah, that story kind of reminded me of, like, you know, the infamous Easter Island. You know, they have those statues overlooking the water for the return of what, you know?
Yeah.
So it almost kind of reminded me of that, where he turned himself to stone overlooking everything to what, maybe watch what we do with his lake that he created, or
yeah, something.
Maybe he did return, who knows, you know?
Never know.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, Lake Champlain is infamous for our lake monster, Champ.
Yes.
So, and then we have the famous photograph, may she rest in peace, too, which you actually interviewed her. So I guess, like, for those that may not have gotten a chance to really know who she was, but, like, you know, just real quick, like, for this aspect is, what was she like? Like, because you know how they usually say with witnesses, sometimes they can either change their story, or sometimes they will show, like, the emotion. What I'm trying to say is, like, what was she like still when you were talking to her, of, you know, just being able to say, like, look, this is what happened, this is my photo, and, like, what was the reaction?
Yeah. So, so many names, like so many people. It's like when we started talking about how we were going to do this podcast and you were going to invite me on. And I was like, oh man, I've done so many ghost stories in so many books that sometimes I can't remember where one, you know, ends and another begins. But yeah, when I was writing Ghosts and Legends of Lake Champlain, I felt so fortunate to talk to Sandy Manzi, who has since passed away. And, you know, you ask about kind of her demeanor and how she, like, handled all this. I was so impressed by the fact that she was so completely, like, down to earth and really grounded about how she, just really matter of fact about how she felt about this incredible discovery that she had made. And for people who don't know how it happened, you know, back in the 70s, she was here with her fiance, and they were on the shores of Lake Champlain up in the St. Albans area. And, you know, they just trundled all of their stuff from the car down to the lake. And when her fiance came down, she was sitting there staring out at the lake. Kids are playing on the edge of the water, and she's looking, and she sees this thing with this long neck, you know, reminiscent of a horse's head, and a long neck with a hump. And it's there in front of her. And she told me, he said to her, why are you sitting there? Get the kids. And he ran down and he's, you know, pulling these protesting kids. The kids are like, no, we don't want to go. And he gets them out of the water. And she had the presence of mind to pick up their, I think it was, at the time, like an Instamatic camera, Kodak Instamatic, pick it up. She said she took one shot and her hands were a little shaky. She didn't get it. It was blurry. The second shot was the shot we all know, people all over the world now know as that, like, first incredible and very credible picture of the Lake Champlain monster. And it was so exciting to me to talk to her, and so grounding to me to realize that here's this person who made this huge discovery. And what did she do? She looks at it and she says, you know, she goes and she has a bunch of pictures developed and she looks at it and she's like, nobody's ever going to believe this. And she puts it in the back of a photo album. And then she and her fiance get married, and and it's in the back of the album. And then when she came back to Vermont, she's talking to some folks at work, and somebody said they were going to Scotland and they couldn't wait to see that Loch Ness monster. And she just chuckled and said, "Oh, you don't have to go that far to see something like that." And everybody's, you know, asking her, "What do you mean?" And so she brought the picture in. People were totally flabbergasted. Now, what I like to make a point about is this was during a time when people at home weren't using Photoshop to change their photos. We didn't have telephones that would let us edit our photos. She had this photo and it was incredible and it was real. And, it was tested. People said this photo has not been tampered with and people wanted to buy it. The National Enquirer, wanted it. And she just said at the time, these people knocking at her door, she thought that there was a better purpose for this photo, you know, than it's just like, I could make some money, but what, you know, I mean, it's history, really. It's an artifact of our natural history. And so she did end up, right around the time I interviewed her, she had she'd basically turned the picture over to Echo in Burlington. And so now anytime that picture is used without being pirated, Echo is gonna make, they've got the copyright and they're the ones that are gonna benefit. And because the work they do involves, you know, maintaining Lake Champlain and educating people about the lake, I think that that is the best thing she ever could have done. And funny side story, interesting coincidence. During the first part of the pandemic, I got a call from folks at the network, the CW, and they were the production team from Mysteries Decoded, and they came to Burlington to do a episode about Champ. And because of my book, Ghosts and Legends of Lake Champlain, they asked me to come and be a part of it. And that's actually, after all this time, I think it was midsummer 2020 that they came. So a couple of years later, this episode is going to air on August 10th. So we'll see how much of me ends up on the cutting room floor. but it was fun, so much fun to do. And, you know, so challenging, during a pandemic, so challenging, but they kept the cameras rolling. It was fun. And great to educate people further about, you know, P.T. Barnum had a reward out for Champ. He wanted to get a hold of that monster and preserve it, you know. Yep. But thanks to the legislatures on both sides of Lake Champlain, that cannot happen. It's Champ is protected.
Yeah, on both sides of the lake. Yeah, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I think New York that was able to protect him first before it came over to Vermont, right?
You know, I don't remember which was first, but I do remember reading about the fact that, you know, Champ was not going to be able to have a bounty on its head, and that and that sounded pretty good to me. I've talked to people who, it would be nice to have more. It'd be nice to have more photographic evidence. I think the last time I heard of anything that I found really credible was a young man who was walking along the sort of inlet at Oakledge Park early in the morning, and he didn't have a lot of battery left on his camera, but he saw something that looked like Champ, and he took some video that was posted on YouTube, got, you know, millions of hits. And I think that people might be able to find it in the archives of, oh my gosh, what's the site? It's a cryptozoologist. Cryptomundo. So there's a site called Cryptomundo, and it might be in their archives, this video that they were smart enough to
see. Is that like a minute-long video?
I think it's a minute long. I think it is. And it, all the local news stations, you know, it was on the local news stations, and then it was on YouTube. YouTube was, you know, 2006, still pretty young. Yeah.
Yeah, I think I know exactly which video you're talking about. Yeah, I tried watching that, and I was just like, man, I can't seem to figure out what that is, because it can't be a fish with the way the waves are moving, with everything that's going on. Like, I don't know. It just boggled my brain of what
It made me laugh. It made me laugh so hard because people are like, it's a moose. I'm like, it's not a moose.
A moose?
It's not. It is definitely not shaped like a moose. And somebody has said, it's a big dog. I'm like, I don't know.
No.
Jury is out.
No. Yeah. you would be seeing more of the dog. Same with the moose. I mean, a moose is huge as it is. So, I mean, real quick, that's almost like the people saying from the Finding Bigfoot show there, where we had the infamous Mother Bigfoot in the picture there from Frank's apple tree farm or apple farm, and they were trying to say that was an owl.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. And it's just like, there's so many things wrong with that statement, because because if you really look at the picture of the screenshot that Frank took on his little apple farm, you can clearly tell, like, these tiny little hands are grabbing on the left arm of this creature, because whether it be Bigfoot or not, I'm just going to say creature just for the sake of it. But it looks like little arms are, like, hanging onto the arm, like, just little fingers, and it's just like, if that's supposed to be an owl, please explain to me then what these little arms are that are grabbing on the left side of the bigger creature.
Too many mysteries. Yes. So many mysteries. And people have to keep an open mind. That people are, you know, people ask me all the time, like, do you believe in ghosts? And I said, I wouldn't be doing what I do for a living if I did not believe in ghosts. And I said, but I'll tell you what, I will leave open... I'll leave things open to the possibility that it's some kind of, it's, you know, depending on who you are, you've got to believe there's some kind of energy. I mean, people are not just, you know, people are hopeful a lot of times when they've lost a loved one about wanting to have contact, but there are so many things that are unexplained that happen to people that are not related in any way to whatever the story is. And we see these things and get these accounts time and time again. Whatever it is, if it's like, you know, some kind of time leap, some kind of other energy, I just have to say that, you know, whatever it is, I believe it's there. I can't pin down exactly what it is. Call it a ghost, call it a, you know, whatever you want. But, you know, I do believe.
Yeah. And one of my famous quotes that I like to say every now and then is, like, everything has energy, you know, everything has energy. And if you think otherwise, then I guess you need to go outside more. And because, I mean, you know, great examples would be like, you know, residual haunting, where they left the imprint on either a battlefield, this building, this whatever, this house in general, you know, this object even, because that's where we even get like the cursed object, I guess. Or I might be saying that wrong, but that sounds right to me. But, you know, like, that energy is built around, I'm going to say, these walls in a way, even though I don't know what would be the technical term of you know, saying it for being outside, because, well, let's just say for the example here, like the Civil War, you know, the bloodiest war ever. So if you go to Gettysburg, you know, that whole field is just painted in red, basically. So that's the imprint that was left. And that's why people say even like what 100 and something years later that they can still hear the battle still going on to this day, kind of like with a Hubbardton battlefield here, you know?
Yeah. I just had a situation maybe a week or so ago where I follow a lot of paranormal sites on Facebook, and people were talking about different, very haunted places. And somebody remarked that Gettysburg was one of the most haunted places anywhere. And another person weighed in, "Oh, don't be ridiculous. It just amazes me how people pick their favorite place and then they call it the most haunted place." And I usually try to stay out of these things. And I wrote back and was like, "Are you kidding me? Do you know how many people died just on that main battlefield at, like, on the big, you know?" And then you're not even talking about Cemetery Hill. You're not even, many people. So many people died in Gettysburg, and Gettysburg is so haunted that we stayed in like a comfort inn in Gettysburg with a little mall, like a little two-sided like strip mall behind it. And every store we went into, the people would tell us about how haunted the mall was, you know? It's like, it was, and I said, "How is that so haunted?" And then I did some research on the site, and it used to be one of the old field hospitals. So right there where, the mall is there, used to. So people were dying there. People were dying, you know, regularly over the course of this battle. And, I remember saying to this person, you know, it wasn't just like they fought and that was it. They fought for days. People waited, you know, on Cemetery Hill, knowing that they were going to die,
Yeah.
And just amazing. You were talking about, do you have time for you were talking about residual hauntings, like,
yeah,
you know, the ones that aren't intelligent hauntings. So I went on a ghost tour in Portland, Maine years ago. And the story is a story that I just carried with me. I don't know if you know, a ton of the city back in the 1800s in Portland was destroyed by a horrific fire, just terrible fire, and took down a bunch of buildings, changed the landscape of the town. So the
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
So our guide told us that he had learned about this guy who had moved to Portland from somewhere down south. And he'd got a job in the city, he'd got a little apartment, and his apartment was in one of the buildings that had escaped the fire. It had been damaged, it had escaped the fire, but it was close to the area that had been destroyed. So the guy, he's in this little apartment and he'd go to work. He didn't really know anybody, so he'd go home, he'd make some supper, he'd watch some sports on TV, and then he'd take a shower and he'd go to bed. And he said the first several nights were fine. And then after he was getting used to the place, he goes to bed and he rolls over, and this woman comes through the wall of his bedroom, her arms outstretched. She's just staring straight ahead. She lets out this silent scream, and then she runs out the door, through the door.
Nice.
So he's like, "What the hell?" So it doesn't happen for a couple of nights. And then one night it happens again, and it keeps happening. So he's sitting around at work with a couple of his friends in the cafeteria at work. And he tells him about it. And one of the guys goes, "Dude, you need to move out of that apartment." And he goes, "Do I really? Because I got to tell you, all she does every time she comes is run through the wall, hold out her hands. She makes a scream. And then she runs through the door, and then I roll over and I go back to sleep." So that's like an example of somebody who's just like taking it easy when it comes to spirit energy. He was like, "I don't know. It seems like it's fine."
In this case, yeah, it is fine because,
yeah,
you know, that just sounds like it's just repeating in itself mm-hmm. over and over again. Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. It's like
just that residual haunting, just energy.
Yeah. It's whatever she was doing. Like, I'm trying to think. Like, so she had her arm stretched out before she screamed and then ran away. That's interesting.
So I'm thinking that what she was doing was like, you know, I'm imagining because I'm a writer.
Right.
I was like, what would she be doing? Well, okay, so this building was renovated, probably reconfigured. She may have lived in an apartment that was wherever she's coming from and mm-hmm. part of that apartment. And so she's running, probably saying, you know, like fire, fire, you know, or come with me, you know, like getting her kids or getting, you know, whoever's in the house, come with me, you know, and she holds out her arms and she screams, whatever she screams. And then she's out the door, you know, it's like, we've all got to go. We're leaving. It's fire. We're going to burn. And that's just my tour guide's intuition. That's all. Yeah.
That's good enough for me. Cause yeah, I mean, I don't know why else you would have your arm stretched out and like you were trying to pick something up, but I don't know.
Yeah. Just like, hey, come on. We got to go, you know, whatever she's yelling, you know?
Yeah. So, I might as well mention this since we're just talking about Gettysburg, but it would just be perfect because I actually just recently saw an article again that brought it up, and apparently he still resides there, so I'll just say it again. So, Abraham Lincoln, I guess, still roamed around the White House to this day.
I think I have definitely heard of Lincoln's ghost. And it's, you know, and it's funny. His wife was such a huge fan of spiritualism. Mary Todd Lincoln was someone who, you know, consulted with psychics and was into seances and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and so the fact that Abraham Lincoln, you know, she's got this husband who kind of tolerated her, you know, her interest, but now we hear that he walks around the White House. A cool thing about Mary Todd Lincoln, I love that she was actually one of the people back then who hired someone to build her one of those caskets that had a coffin alarm. You know, and people were so afraid of
being buried alive. Yeah.
Being buried alive. Yeah. So she was one of the people who was like, yeah, sign me up. I need a bell outside my coffin so that if I'm not really dead, I can ring the bell and somebody can come and dig me up. So she was fascinating. And she, you know, she's one of those people who people talked a lot about her being, you know, kind of dippy and she had a lot of needs. But a lot of times people who are sensitive to spirit energy seem quirky to other people. So, yeah.
Well, I'll touch on that buried alive thing. That's like our story here in Vermont for New Haven with Tiffany Clark Smith's grave, you know?
Yeah.
Which,
his
have
grave.
You ever seen it in person?
We have gone to see the grave. And it's just so creepy to me because I am a person who is super claustrophobic. I can't even imagine making that kind of, like, you know, advance accommodation for myself. But, you know, with the little window, the window's kind of, if you've seen it, the window's kind of like mossy and gross on the inside. But I think it's amazing the lengths people will go to. I mean, the way I look at or try to look at, you know, death and dying now that I'm older is that it's a natural process. It's not something to be afraid of, but I might think differently if I wasn't dead and somebody had decided to, you know, I was like, oh, this isn't good. Because as a claustrophobic, that would not be a good situation for me.
Well, I remember, this must be like 10 years or so now, but I remember you used to be able to look down into the window before the moss and all the condensation and stuff took over, because unfortunately, nobody thought to put in like a way to you know, to make it the glass not, you know, get ruined and fog up and everything else. So yeah, but I remember one of the stories where you could look down the window and possibly see the body of Tiffany Clark Smith and stuff. So you could see like his tools, I think, was in his hands, and something about a chair, I think. Like, so it's because I know he said he wanted to have furniture and tools down there with him so that way he could break the glass and yell out for help. But then they also said he had a bell outside so that he could ring it too.
Yeah, that's a lot of planning. That is a lot of possible afterlife or possible after burial planning. So
it really is. Like, who really went that far to go, okay, I want this, like, why we're at it, maybe just get a fridge down there too, you know?
I think I have to say to somebody, if you think I'm dead, you know, there's going to be a period of time when you are forbidden from burying me. Just if you think I'm dead, hold me over a little bit. I don't want to be, you know, like down there with a bell and a chair and a candle or whatever.
Yeah, and I think that's what he said, too. He said, before you bury me, like, make sure to weave me laying on a stretcher or whatever, however he worded it, for like a couple days to make sure he just doesn't randomly wake up before being put in the ground. I think that was his other way of doing it. But yeah.
Right.
Yeah, so moving on real quick. So I know you had Wicked Vermont, which that was more like true crime and stuff, but you were mentioning there's like possibly like a ghostly tale in that one.
It's brief, but I do write about Ethan Allen, because Ethan Allen is always kind of a funny character to me. We look at Ethan Allen for his, you know, daring exploits, you know, over at Ticonderoga, and sometimes we forget, like, he was a human being with a lot of failings, sometimes more failings than others. I mean, people thought that he was this loud blowhard and, you know, just, you know, he was difficult to deal with. But he used to say, you know, sitting around the fireside with people who knew him, he would talk about how he believed in reincarnation, and that when he passed away, Ethan Allen claimed he was going to be reincarnated as a powerful white horse. And when I first read this somewhere, I was like, oh, that is ridiculous. And how does anybody predict what they're going to come back as if they're reincarnated? But sure enough, this is weirdly enough, there are people who have walked or lived near the Intervale in Burlington who have seen, and it's always in the morning, this very powerful white steed, this white horse galloping across the fields there in the Intervale. And, you know, it might be somebody headed down, you know, to do some fishing, or just somebody, you know, somebody working on the land nearby, and they see this horse. And I think that it's just the craziest, but also the most fortunate thing. It's like, how did he know? How did he? This guy was bossy in life and then bossy in the afterlife. This is what I think.
Well, that's like, I forget the story exactly, but going back to like the haunted Burlington for a minute, but I know we have the Ethan Allen Engine 4 building.
The Ethan Allen Engine Company on Church Street.
Yes.
Yeah. And that is a story of a wonderful, heroic firefighter who went to a fire on a, his name was Edwin Parker, and he was originally from Cambridge. And he went to a fire in January, back in the early part of the 1800s. And it was such a hot fire, a couple of different teams were called, and it was at the old Holt Spool and Bobbin Company on Pine Street. And unfortunately, while he was there, the side of the building erupted and rained brick down on him, and he died. But then after that, it's said that he's an entity hanging around inside the old fire station, the Burlington City Arts Building. And a funny thing happened. My husband and I were, I think it was a late spring, early summer day. We went downtown, had lunch at a local restaurant. We were looking at places to do a special event, and the City Arts Building was open. So we went inside and we got into the elevator to go up to one of the rooms that's used as an event space. And we went up about halfway and the elevator stopped. And we're like, okay, we don't know who else is who's working in the building. We could ring the buzzer. We don't. And so I think I said something like, Edwin, this isn't funny. And when I said, Edwin, this isn't funny, the elevator started moving up to the top floor and we were fine. I think we took stairs down the other way. But yeah, it's just a lot of people are, you know, people, I know we're probably getting to the end of our time, but I wanted to say that people are so funny a lot of times online about, they'll say, I think I've got a ghost and I want to know how to tell them this or that. And I say, just tell them, you know, because if you believe a ghost has crossed over, and this ghost was a person before they crossed over, then how do you think you're going to communicate with them best if they're there and they've crossed over? My daughter is very sensitive to spirit energy, and she will just come right out and say, now stop that. That's, you know, I don't like it. You need to stop it. And when she does, she's a school teacher and she can be very stern. So when she says stop, they usually stop.
That's good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I always loved that building, the Eisenhower old fireplace.
It's a great, wonderful that we still have it. And when I walk on Church Street, even though it's big glass windows now, I love to imagine it the way it was and imagine that there's a fire and this team of horses comes speeding out onto Church Street and, you know, just racing to wherever it has to go. And the big bell up on top of the building, ringing the bell so that all the volunteer firefighters can come and get in their, you know, get in the wagon, get in their clothes and go off and save a building.
Yeah, and that's why I've always thought about why he still lingers there, is because he's waiting for that fire call, you know? He's ready to do a job still, even after all these years.
Ready to do a job or making sure everybody else is doing their job, I think. There's another fire station in town where station one over on Winooski Avenue, there have been people who told me that an old captain still rings the old bell system when they're going to go to a, you know, it's computerized now, but they say when they're going to go to a really big fire, they'll know it because the captain rings the old bell.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Well, real quick, before we do wrap things up, you have a book that came out 2020, almost 2 years ago, which I, for some reason, didn't even know about. Last that I heard was Wicked Vermont, and I didn't even know that this Lakeview Cemetery of Burlington, Vermont came out. So that's told you how much I haven't been paying attention to what's really been coming out, I guess. But so I guess, what is the Lakeview Cemetery of Burlington, Vermont book?
Lakeview Cemetery of Burlington, Vermont was another one of those that the History Press got in touch with me and said, we have this series of historic cemetery books that's doing really well, and we'd love to know if you'd like to write one for Lakeview Cemetery. And I said yes. And Lakeview Cemetery is such a gem because it's one of the old, what they call a lawn park cemetery. And a lawn park cemetery back in the day would be a cemetery where very scenic, and people would go on a weekend after they'd finished, you know, they'd go on a Sunday after church, they'd pack a picnic lunch, they'd spread a blanket and then sit with their neighbors and relax and gossip. So a lot of really interesting people are buried at Lakeview Cemetery. Oliver Otis Howard, who started Howard University, is one of the folks buried there. And I was stunned because he's, you know, I found out he's not from Vermont, but his son was living in Burlington. And so he moved to Burlington. And when he passed away, he was here. And, you know, another famous name from the Civil War. There are just so many. Edwin Parker, who I just talked about, the heroic firefighter, he's not buried at Lakeview Cemetery, but a gentleman he worked for when he wasn't fighting fires, Socrates Beach, who owned a cookie and cracker company in town, a cracker manufacturing company, he is buried in Lakeview Cemetery, and his story is wonderful too. He, for some reason, did not go off. I don't know whether he had some kind of ailment or what it was. He didn't go off to fight in the Civil War, but he made sure that when troops left Burlington, they left with cookies and crackers and cakes, you know, food for the journey. And he was also very kind, Socrates Beach, to the children of Burlington. In Burlington's South End, there used to be a place called the Home for Destitute Children. And in Burlington, in the late 1800s, mid to late 1800s, there was a place called Gray's Carriage Manufacturing Company. And then we had Socrates Beach's company. And so they would put their heads together, pool their resources, And Greys had not just carriages, but these big sleighs that would hold 12 or 15 children. They would pile these children from the from this orphanage into a sleigh and wrap them all up in blankets right around the holiday time. And Socrates Beach would fill the sleighs with cookies and cakes. And these kids would get to go off on a ride, you know, a snowy sleigh ride around Burlington. So he's a fascinating character, too. John J. Flynn, who started the Flynn Theater on Main Street, is also buried at Lakeview Cemetery. And as you probably know, there's a great ghost story attached to the Flynn Theater. Actually, three different ghost stories, but the most famous ghost is just called the Flynn Ghost. And he usually appears when people are not being very careful when they're working up high.
Is that the same place where the spear is also said to be... I might be getting the story mixed up with maybe the other one or something, but he like either watches or like to perform with the actors or something.
Actually, he watches a lot of times. He'll be watching, but he's not watching, I don't think, to watch the performance. I think he's watching the folks who are working on the show. I know that a friend of mine went up to, what's called the cat, or went over over the seats to what's called the catwalk. She and another individual were sitting while a show was going on, and she tapped her friend and pointed, and they could see there in the dark. They could see this ghostly figure. So it's an amazing amazing thing when people see him. A lot of times it's when they're up high on the catwalk. They're bringing stuff to the organ loft, and they're just not being so careful about how they're going about it.
Fair enough. Yeah, it's like we were kind of stating earlier. There's so many stories to remember with names and stuff, and everything else. Like, I mean, it's like Emily Bridge. There's three stories, four stories, or something like that. It's just like it's really way too hard to remember everything. It really is.
Can't remember them all. Can't remember
No, no. But all right, before we wrap things up real quick, I guess for the final segment here is, so what is the plan for your Queen City Ghost Walk for either this year or, how can people really keep up to date with everything that's going on with you and, the Queen City Ghost Walk and stuff, whatever you'd like to plug.
Sure. Okay. Well, as I mentioned, I started off with one tour and then things kind of grew. This year, what our plans are to keep doing our Darkness Falls tour downtown. We're going to have some Friday night Darkness Falls tours in August, and then we'll be doing Ghosts and Legends of Lake Champlain and our downtown tour Friday and Saturday starting in September, and that'll go for a couple of months. We're also going to be doing on Thursday nights our true crime tours, and then on Friday and Saturday nights in October, we have some tours for kids at Lakeview Cemetery. So in addition to our regular Sunday Lakeview Cemetery tours on Friday and Saturday nights, we're going to be having some early evening tours, kind of fun. Just scary enough, hopefully, just spooky enough, but kids will get a chance to do some dowsing there in the cemetery and maybe see if they can communicate with the spirits a little bit with some pendulum dowsing. And we're going to make sure that that we've got a nice, safe cemetery walk for them. The kids are all going to be given glow stick necklaces, so we can keep track of all of them. It's going to be a lot of fun. So that's basically what's going on. We're hoping to do Rocky Horror Picture Show again this year, and maybe a little surprise about who we'll be partnering with to do that. And that's, once we do Rocky Horror Picture Show, we've got only a couple of days left of the season. Halloween's on a Monday night, but people shouldn't let that scare them away. If you're in a place where you don't have trick-or-treaters, or you prefer not to have trick-or-treaters, you can always come on a ghost walk Monday night, the 31st of October.
We might as well do that, because I think last year we only had like one or two trick-or-treaters, which is weird. Well, so,
yeah, but if people want to find out about tickets, they can go to 7daystickets.com, or they can go to our website, queencityghostwalk.com, and learn more about us, and then click right through to make a purchase.
There you go. And yeah, also I'm assuming like all the links for your books as well is on Queen City Ghost Walk as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. My books are available on Amazon, but I love all our local independent booksellers. People can also get books at Yankee Bookshop and Phoenix Books and Crow, I know, carries some of my books. And so before you hit Amazon, if you have a independent bookseller that you like to frequent, absolutely check with them. And if they don't carry my books, then you can ask them, yeah, please carry those books.
Well, there you go. Well, Thea, it's been a pleasure, and I'm glad that we were able to make this happen, and I look forward to hopefully meeting you in the future, whether it be a ghost tour or maybe a book signing or something.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, and you know, for everybody else listening, thank you so much for your time, and if you got this far, you deserve a cookie and crackers, just like everybody else. But until next time, make sure to keep your eyes open because you just never know if an apparition will appear in front of you.